Welcome back to Nkwazi Unfiltered. This is a place where we get to unpack the realities of who people really are. We've had a plethora of guests on the show. We've had conversations with very interesting individuals. And today is definitely another day that we're going to have a chat with someone of great interest to all of us, because he's basically a wonder kid. He's managed to pull off the impossible and is pretty much the embodiment of the Zambian dream. I need to hasten to say this. We're actually breaking a record today because he's definitely, without a shadow of a doubt, our youngest guest ever. But he's achieved enough for 5 or 6 lifetimes, and you'll understand what I'm talking about soon. Without giving too much away, he's a man who's an entrepreneur. He has built up literally an empire using digital media, and then going off and transposing that into the real world where we have physical and tactile and tangible stores that are doing stuff in the electronics space. If you're a gadget fanatic, then you're definitely going to be chatting with an individual who's right up that alley and is able to give you the very best that technology has to offer. As if that's not enough, he's gone off and decided to create an innovation hub where like-minded individuals get together and they think through things and they brainstorm and come up with the next big thing. I think the intro has already given you enough of a hint of who we're chatting with. Today, we are chatting with founder and CEO of eMark, Mr. Emmanuel Mwanza. Welcome to Nkwazi Unfiltered, Emmanuel.
Thank you very much, Kamiza, for having me on this, your prestigious podcast. I should, from the onset, confess that I'm a huge fan of the podcast.
Oh.
I watch nearly every episode. Most of your guests are people that I look up to.
Fantastic.
These are people that have inspired me. So I to sit on this podcast, but more so to be hosted by you, is very humbling. I'm so excited and looking forward to a fun-filled conversation.
Yeah, no, we're definitely going to have lots of fun. Now, I discovered a little something about you. You're not originally from Lusaka.
No. Not quite.
Okay. Where do you hail from?
So born, not a few decades ago.
2+.
Yes, so 2+, north of 2. Yeah, born on the Copper Belt, very right. Small town, Luansha.
Right.
Originally, a mining township called Mpatamatu.
Right.
That is where I was born. That's where it all started.
Mm.
Yeah.
And What of your family makeup? Siblings?
Yep. I'm the fourth born in a family of 5.
Right.
So it's just 5 guys. You can imagine.
No sisters?
And no sisters at all.
Wow. So 5 lads.
Yeah, 5 lads.
How did the parents cope with that? Because disciplining 5 lads cannot be easy.
Of course. I think we give our mother a living hell.
So you're responsible for aging.
Of course. Yeah. But yeah, it was a home of 5 guys.
Mm.
Still have fond memories of me and my brothers growing up in Luansha. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Amazing. And in terms of school, which schools did you attend? Was that in Luansha or did you move to any other school?
Yeah, of course, I did. We did move at some point. I didn't really grow all the way up in Luansha.
Right.
I think about 7th grade, I moved. I started out, it was a private school of some sort. There's a man who used to run private schools on the Copper Belt.
Right.
Luansha was very known. He called his schools Suzika Private Schools.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's now in hindsight when I look back and I appreciate that the man was enterprising.
Right.
Yeah. So I started out there. Then for my high school, 2007 to 2008, moved to Ndola.
Right.
Then from there, I went into a boarding school. It was at Chiwala. That's where I started my secondary and eventually finished before coming to the University of Zambia.
And in your school years, which field were you leaning towards? Which subjects were you strong in? Because that usually determines what we want to do after we're done with school. What was it for you?
For me, it was I was a decent pupil, if I would say it.
Mm.
I think I was good at math. I was good at English.
Right.
I was good at sciences. In fact, for my high school, I did pure sciences.
Oh, nice.
I did
nice.
Additional mathematics.
You just didn't like yourself. You decided, let me punish myself.
Telling you. So
it's fancy.
So I think I pretty much, of course, I loved the sciences. I loved the math. But for some reason, I was also good in English. I was good in social sciences.
Right.
And I remember no one used to beat me at my school when it came to history. I got awards for that. But I would still balance.
Right.
I would still be a decent pupil if you brought math. I got a distinction. And so I think I was stable across all subjects.
A well-rounded pupil.
I would say that.
Nice.
I wasn't top of class,
but
I was not middle class.
No.
So I was between middle and top class.
Okay.
Yeah.
You were in the upper echelons, the cream.
If you'd call it that way, yeah.
Interesting. And during your formative years, what influences impacted you to turn you into the man that you are today? Like they often say we see people and without realizing it, they have an impact on us and they imprint onto us.
Yep.
Which people impacted you and what was it about what they did that made you say, wow, you know, dreams are achievable out there?
Right. I think the number one person I would owe it to would be my mom.
Mm.
I think my mom had the most impact in my very formative years.
Right.
So my mom was a teacher and she was big on discipline.
Yes, yeah. Teachers and discipline.
Exactly, if you know what I mean. For her, it wasn't just about performance in class.
Right.
It went down to how smartly you looked after your books.
Oh, you were in a military camp.
telling you. So she was big on discipline.
Mm.
She was big on hard work. She paid attention to detail. And when I look back, these are some of the things that I've carried through. So she was a very grounded woman.
Mm.
She was very hardworking. But also other than that, of course, my mother was, I think, my number one role model.
Right.
She didn't have much, but this is one person that believed in hard work. This is one person that believed in being ambitious.
Right.
And so she inculcated those values in us.
Mm.
My mother was a content person.
Right.
So I think when I look back now, she played a very, very big role in being the person that I am. But I think away from that, I grew up a very curious child.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I used to ask a lot of questions.
Uh-huh.
It's very sensitive. Just 2 weeks, I think a week ago, I was texting with my brother.
Right.
And I was telling him about stuff that happened in 2001. I gave him the actual time, gave him the actual date. Of course, he remembered the incident, but those details.
So this history thing was no joke, eh? The awards
I
were
think
just...
so. I think so. Yeah, it was real. So yeah, I think I grew up a curious child, very sensitive, paid attention to things, and kept asking questions.
Right.
So I kept asking questions. Right. Why the world works the way it does.
Mm.
Why certain kids are privileged and why others are not. And I think when I look back, it's a culmination of those things. My mother, my experiences.
Okay. And where was dad in all this?
My dad.
Yeah.
Well, my dad was very much around, but my mother was more hands-on with us.
No,
my dad was around. My dad, military man.
Really?
Yeah. He worked for, at some point in his early years, worked for ZNS.
Right.
So he was the man. You knew that dad was a no-go area.
Right.
So my mother was a mixture of both grace and truth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you knew you couldn't get away with certain things,
yeah.
But also you can have a decent conversation.
You had certain pathways you could work to be able to have the freedom to express yourself. Right.
Exactly. But my dad was, this is a noble area.
typical Zambian home. In most homes,
exactly.
I mean, dad's walking in one way, kids are scampering that way because you don't want to cross it.
Exactly. But yeah, that was a kind of home that I was raised in.
Okay. And in terms of, you know, how a family has this mix amongst siblings, you know, there's always the quiet one, There's the mischievous one. Yeah. There's the one who knows how to get mom to say yes.
Yes.
Which one were you?
I was the quiet one.
Okay.
So if things went wrong, definitely I wasn't in the picture. I was the quiet one. I just loved my school.
Right.
I don't know if I would be letting down my brothers if I say this, but I think I was a favorite.
Well, we all think that.
We all think that, all yeah. Think but that. Yeah. but I was a quiet one. I was a reserved one. Very sensitive child. Yeah, that is who I was. I wasn't a troublemaker. I wasn't far from it.
Interesting. So in this whole contemplative state, because you're always thinking, obviously, and quite empathetic from what I hear, because you're sensitive and you're observing what's going on. What then triggered the entrepreneurial spirit in you? Is it something that started in childhood? Or is it something that you stumbled upon later?
Right.
Because I've heard stories of people who tell you, no, I used to sell anything and everything from the time I was a kid.
Oh, yeah,
you
yeah.
know, I sold sweet potatoes and I sold.
Right, yeah.
Is that your story?
To be honest, like I said, my mother was big on working hard.
Right.
And those days, this entrepreneurship thing was not a thing. You know, it wasn't a thing.
No, it wasn't an option.
My mother was a teacher. Yeah. So for her, it was education.
Right.
And I never thought that one day I would run an enterprise.
Right.
It was not something that was right up my alley. I was just, okay, what I need to do is get a decent education.
Right.
Maybe end up in a bank and maybe end up being a lawyer. But really, like I said, I grew up a kid that was very curious and kept asking questions.
Right.
So I think this entrepreneurship thing for me came from asking questions and searching. And if I did this, what would the results look like?
Right. So cause and effect.
Yeah, cause and effect. It had nothing to do with passion. It had nothing to do with ambition. And I remember when I completed high school.
Right.
When I completed high school and came to Lusaka with my uncle at the time, I looked for what to do that gap year between high school and uni.
Right.
So I got a gig as a waiter.
Oh.
Yeah.
Pray tell, at which institution, if I might ask?
I worked for Wimpy Mandahiwa at the time.
Nice.
I worked for Wimpy Mandahiwa at the time. And when I started getting some change, you know, some tips, extra money, I said, okay, what can I do with this money? Again, asking questions, really, is where it started from. Of course, I wouldn't call it business, but I did a bit of selling stuff here and there.
Okay.
I remember a very good friend of mine is now an architect. He loved my sense of fashion. So what I would do is I would buy stuff I would wear, then he would get it off me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you were basically modeling clothing for him.
I think so. So that's a bit and pieces of what I would call enterprising in my early years. Yeah. But also I remember, I think in, should have been grade 11.
Right.
11th grade and 12th grade, I had a number of books.
Right.
So my brother got me tons of books. And I said, let me make sure I understand these books that I won't have to go back to them.
Right.
Then
right.
After I did that, I sold them. I sold those books. So.
Okay. So you basically, for you, they became blank pages.
Yes. Said, okay, I'm done with these books. If I ever needed them, it's just for the purpose of revision.
Impressive. And good profit on the sale?
Was I profitable? I mean, it was pocket money, really.
Okay.
And again, another time I sold stuff in my very early years was as a youngster.
Right.
I needed to take a girl on an ice cream date. So I
Please tell me you sold something legit. And...
No, very legit.
Okay.
So these were stuff that I think ran down. We're not using them in the house. So I got those things were cables, computer cables, odd stuff.
And liquidated them.
Yeah, got them, went to the market, got stuff because I was taking this girl on a date. Ice cream date.
Impressive. So, I trust it was a good date.
It was fair.
Okay.
We had ice cream and got on a bus. Yeah.
Nice. Life's simple pleasures. Yeah,
telling you.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
But, so you've always, from what I hear, you've always had a respectful relationship with money.
I think so. I think so.
I get a sense that you've always understood the value of money.
Right. Yeah.
And how you have to work to earn that.
Right. Yeah.
Because it is said an entrepreneur is basically someone who sees an opportunity.
Correct.
And finds a solution. Yeah. And figures out, hey, how can I profitably fill that,
exactly.
that situation? And how can I fulfill what is lacking within this situation? And from what I'm hearing, this is something that you had inherently in you and didn't really need anybody to start teaching you. These are the 10 golden rules of entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
You just sort of figured out, okay, I need money.
Right.
Here's a problem. I need to take her on a date. I don't have money. How do I figure out this gap here? Looking back at your childhood, what would you say was your most exciting memory?
I think my most exciting memory, I was having this conversation with a friend of mine not too long ago. And so I'm not sure if you can remember very well how we used to eat fish.
Mm.
So it would be cut in three.
Yes.
Yeah. So you've got the head, you've got the middle part,
and the tail.
You've got that. So one time we were having shima, the friend of mine, and we had the whole brim, you know, to ourselves.
Yes.
So she was having hers, I was having mine. And we talked about, do you remember growing up that you couldn't even think of, having a whole fish to yourself?
Yeah.
I was like, no, it didn't even cross the
no,
mind.
No, it was impossible.
Yeah. So for me, really, those are my fondest memories when I shared meals with my siblings.
Right.
Going to Sunday school with my parents.
Right.
Those are my fondest memories. And also, I think the entrepreneurship thing, I could as well date it back to my mother.
Right.
So she would do a bit of baking. She would bake her scones.
Right.
She would sell to her colleagues at work. And it's now that I look back and I say, oh, that was her being an entrepreneur.
Right.
That was her being a business person. So those are my fondest memories, really, in the house with my siblings, with my parents.
Right.
We would do Bible study.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So really, those are my fondest memories as a child.
So they revolve around the beauty and unity of family.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I trust you're still close-knit with the family now.
Yeah, very. In fact, even before this, I was talking to my brother. Talking to my dad. I'm very close. We're very close.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Let's move into you coming to Lusaka.
Yeah.
So you completed your high school and then decided, let's go to Lusaka.
Yeah.
What was the driving force behind coming to Lusaka? And when you got here, what was distinctly different from life on the Copper Belt?
So came in to Lusaka 2013,
right.
First quarter of 2013. I knew that the following year I'd be going to the University of Zambia.
Okay.
And for me, it was cast in concrete. After high school, I was going to the University of Zambia to either pursue a career in law or economics.
Okay.
So I knew that, okay, going to Lusaka, this is just me. It was an early move.
Right. Right.
Join my uncle. Again, yes, it's a big city. It's very live. It's alive. But again, I'm not thinking about business. I'm here and I'm thinking, what should I do before I go to uni?
Mm.
And yeah, this is a place of opportunity.
Right.
I started looking for what to do. But what was different? Between Lusaka and Copper Belt? Really, it was the commerce.
Right.
Like I told you, I'm a very sensitive person.
Mm.
That's why one of my favorite entrepreneurs is Paul Smith.
Right.
So Paul Smith says a lot of people look but don't see.
Mm.
And a lot of people touch but don't feel. There's right. creativity everywhere.
Right.
So when I came, I knew this city is alive.
Mm.
And there's something here for me.
Right.
I just didn't figure it out. I just didn't figure out what it was.
Mm.
And I remember I tricked my parents and my relatives. It was time to apply.
Right.
So I had an option to either go to CBU or the University of Zambia.
Yeah.
So CBU would always release. They enroll their students much earlier
right.
than UNSA.
Right.
So my brother says, "Have you applied at CBU?" I lied.
I told him
I have applied, but they left me. But in essence, I didn't.
Because you were heading for Lusaka.
Yeah, I'm saying there's something here. I just can't figure it out, but there's something here.
Mm.
So I only applied at UNSA and I got accepted. And it was that process, really. It was that time that I started figuring out that, okay, I could actually be an entrepreneur. I could be a business person. Mm. I could sell the simple stuff.
Right.
And I remember I started selling, I would get devices on a platform called Let's Talk, I'm a sample. So I would get a phone.
Right.
Yeah.
That was Facebook?
Yeah, Facebook.
Right.
Yeah, so I'd get a phone and just sell. Some were secondhand, mostly they were secondhand. Some were sport devices. So right. I would do a bit of value addition, maybe get a phone with a broken screen and refurbish it and sell it. And yeah, I just could feel it that there was something here for me. Yes, my mind was, I need to get a degree from the University of Zambia. But at the same time, I could sense that there was something here for me. Right. The city was alive. The commerce was taking off. And just said, okay, I need to be here.
Okay.
Yep. And
what valuable lessons did you derive from that entrepreneurship start with Let's Talk Amasam?
I remember a friend of mine, and this is what I tell people. I don't like to think of myself as very intelligent. I just listen more.
Okay.
So I'm with a friend of mine. We're in Northmead. We met at Wimpy. And much of the stuff that we've done as EMARC is because somebody said, you know what? You could actually do this. You can actually do that.
Right.
So with a friend of mine, and we were in Northmead, the place we're having a drink. We were off from work. I was sipping on my Fanta. I think he was having his, I don't know what I was drinking. So he says, do you know this thing can actually be a business?
Hmm.
Yeah. So, I know you're selling devices. You're selling one piece, two pieces, and so on and so forth. Why don't you think, I think this can be a business for you.
Right.
Places like eBay, where you can actually order devices and sell and so on and so forth. And yeah, I did run with his advice. And looking back now, what did I learn from that moment?
Mm.
For me, like I said, it was about the sensitivity and also to be able to see the future. Hey, really, I think that time gave me a look into the future.
Right.
That time gave me, when I look back now, I think it had a lot to do with your hard work. Yeah. You have to be present. You have to show up. Hey. And that is what I was doing. I cared about very little stuff. Eh? For me, it was about, I actually had a schedule.
Right.
I knew that at 05, I'm up posting my small phones that I had as stock.
Right.
So looking back now, I think that moment it teaches me things like humility. I remember I had nothing.
Right.
I was just a young lad, I would move from Zikas because we sold to quite a lot of students at the time.
Right, right.
So you'd move from Zikas, you'd go to ZRA, you would be up and about the streets of Lusaka.
Right.
And so for me, looking back now, that time, it's about humility, it's about hard work, and it's about just being present. And this is one thing that I talk about with friends these days, that we're not so present. Life is so fast forward that people are missing what's around. I was listening to a podcast and this guest was talking about how in a world where there's so much, there's never been a time when things have been plenty than now.
True.
It's a time when people are in constant search.
Completely dissatisfied.
You know what I mean?
Constantly feeling like, okay, I need.
Exactly.
I need, like, but It's all right here.
Mm. Whether it's information. Mm. Now it's easy. It's easy to reach out to a girl. I mean, just on your phone.
That's right.
Easy to essentially get an investor. Like everything is at your disposal. But there's never been a time when people are in constant search than now.
True.
And for me, looking back, 2013 was just a year of me just living free and being present, looking into the future and saying, what's in it for me?
Right.
It was really a turning point.
And how did you then turn this around? Because you did a transition from Facebook and ventured onto eBay after you had garnered some funds.
Correct.
How did you figure out this opportunity and how did you monetize that?
Yeah, of course. This happened at the time when I was going into uni. So eventually I went to uni and I graduated. And I was one of the biggest dealers of devices.
Right.
When I was at Wimpy, whether it's your laptops, whether it was your phones, whatever it is that you name it.
Right.
I was your guy.
Right.
And I remember those days, if it was bursary day, people got the allowances from government. I knew I was in money.
Like, yes, someone wanted a gadget.
I'd be in my room and just counting money. That day I wasn't going to class. I'd just be making money. But where did the transition come from? So the time I was going into uni, I'd already established a network of friends. So the guys that ran the Amasample platform, they're quite robust, they're quite big. They knew the network. They were the largest distributors of secondhand devices in the country at the time. So those became my friends. They had suppliers,
they had
networks outside country. That was Africa. Again, we were getting stuff now on eBay.
Wow.
At least we had a robust network for secondhand devices.
Right.
But again, I kept asking questions. And the question now I could rephrase it, but the question that I ask more often now is how good can it get?
Ah.
Yeah. So how good can it get? And so even at the time when we were doing eBay, I was asking, how good can it get? Can I just sell secondhand devices? Is this it? And so we started exploring. I started exploring. I remember jumping on a plane as a young lad, traveled to China just to go and see.
So not to be told stories. You wanted to see it for yourself.
Yeah. I'd never seen a person of my age that had traveled to China at the time. Because now, and I tell this to my young brothers, those that look up to me and think I've got something to share with them.
Right.
Tell them, you guys are lucky. At the time, we never had your Alibaba, you know.
No.
You had to travel.
E-commerce was not where it is today. It
wasn't as robust as it is. So I got on a plane, went to China to just explore. South Africa was one of the countries that I went to because we had a lot of secondhand devices coming from South Africa.
Right.
But I didn't appreciate the dynamics of the commerce that was happening because much of the devices that were coming from South Africa at the time were compromised.
Right.
So I said, this is not the best. Can I see? Of course, eBay, you were doing business with folks from America. You were doing business with folks from the UK.
Right.
Yeah. So would bring in devices. But again, I kept asking questions. So some of the networks, even now that we leverage, whether it's from the UK, whether it's from the US, some of these guys are people that I met on eBay. And it became a chain, really. It became a chain. Before I realized it, I was being introduced to this person. I was being introduced to the next person. We now had a network. By the time I was graduating from campus, we had a network of partners. From the Middle East, we had partners from China, we had partners from the US, from the UK. And I'll confidently tell you this, Kamiza, there's no single device in the world right now that is currently being manufactured that I can supply you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I think we should have a chat. We really should have a chat.
So yeah, really, to be honest, so the transition, again, it had nothing to do with this is what I want to do with my life.
Right.
But it became very apparent whilst I was a student at campus that this is what I wanted to do with my life because then the conflict started coming.
Right.
Whether to be in class or to be out there doing business.
Should I abandon this academic side of things.
Yes.
For the sake of growing the business.
Right.
Because you can't be in two places at once.
Exactly. And, yeah. and the enterprise side of things would always win. So I said,
can only
I think
imagine.
This is an omen.
It's a sign. Let's follow that.
I should take this.
Now, it's sounded like a fairy tale
yep.
up to this point. But then I understand the accusations started flying. Hey,
yep.
this man sells hot phones. This man sells phones that were lifted from people and
right.
have been stolen. What is that about?
I've never had an issue where people are saying we sell hot stuff.
Hmm.
At the time, I was at uni already at a store.
Right.
Yeah, right, a very small store, and that's the thing. People that interact with a brand today, I think, it started out today. But what I did really was a lot of groundwork.
Right.
Yeah, I did quite a lot of groundwork. And I told my cousin, every now and then we talk, he reminds me, he says, Emmanuel, I wish people knew that you were plotting. So the
EMAC,
yeah, the EMAC name was already there when I was
right.
a student.
Right.
And I remember we lived in PHI
right.
at the time. And would be in our bedroom, and I'm telling him, says, once I'm done with uni, I'm gonna get this stuff
right.
up and running. And
right.
I need to do it. And I remember when we were launching the store at East Park, it says,
yes.
I wish people knew that you saw this. So of course, I think the story started coming when we were now out of the ground.
Right.
And
right.
It's been a lot of stories.
Mm.
Sometimes I even wonder whether this is me that people are talking about.
Well, you're so surprised by what's being said. You're like, wait, what are they talking about?
Me? So it's so many stories. People have given me shareholders that are not even shareholders.
Oh my goodness.
People have given me titles. It's a lot of stories.
Mm.
But that's what you get really, hey?
Yeah.
It says when you pray for the rain, should be ready to deal with it.
Oh, you better have your gum boots, your raincoat,
exactly.
and your umbrella ready.
Yeah, I mean, there are times when a comment would come from a frustrated client, and
right.
it would just go out there. And
and
I think it's a Zambian thing, and that is why we do what we do, because
right.
there's a narrative that as EMAC we are trying to change,
right?
And
right.
not just across the tech space, but I think across what people. Perceive of Zambian businesses.
Right, right.
There's, I think, a very prejudiced way of looking at things.
Mm,
to think Zambian enterprises are not all that. To
right,
think local
right.
enterprises cannot provide quality service or quality
right,
products. And
right.
that is a narrative we are trying to change in a small way. To get people to believe that you can be Zambian and still do good work.
You can be
Zambian and still build a business from scratch
right.
based on integrity, based on innovation and
right.
Serving the community. We're very big on that. And I think when you stay the course and all these stories are flying around
right.
and
right.
There's all these things, when you know what you stand for, you know where you're going,
yes.
you know where you're coming from, that then becomes a sort of comfort.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But also knowing that this is my path, this is my journey.
Right.
And the hearsays, the innuendos are part of the game. I think this journey requires a lot of fortitude.
Right.
Emotionally, you need to prepare yourself. But of course, nobody teaches you this. You talked about finance. Nobody teaches you the dynamics of how hard it is to raise finance, to
Correct.
Get a product out on the market,
right.
to get a brand out on the market. It's
right.
it's crazy. It's
right.
it's not easy. I tell people this.
Hmm.
If you can get a decent job,
yes,
that would take care of you, get your kids in decent schools, get you the best health insurance on the market, please do it.
Do it. Yep.
Because the kind of thick skin you need to have.
You've got to be a crocodile.
Ooh, it's crazy. It gets mad. It gets really wild. And you need to have the skin for it. You need to have the resilience, the tenacity.
Mm.
And sometimes the opposition is not just from the outside world. It could be inside the business.
Right.
The losses.
Right.
It's a lot to deal with. So you need to be ready for it.
I hear you. You're dropping lots of gems here.
Is it?
But let's make life easy so that when the team that does the magic behind the scenes are looking to do a reel, they'll have something to refer to.
Yeah.
Someone sitting in their room plotting,
yeah,
just like you were plotting,
right,
and visualizing and seeing this big dream,
yeah,
and planning for it. What advice would you give them as to, let's say, the three things that they'll need to focus on,
right,
to make it as an entrepreneur?
Tough, eh? And why do I say tough? As I believe that this is one area you can't teach because of the different dynamics.
Right.
The business environment is constantly changing. Opportunities are not the same. There's one time where I wanted to call it quit.
Right.
One time I wanted to call it quit. Not because we were not making money as a business, not because there was no traction. I just felt I had done a lot,
right,
in comparison to what I was getting in return. I thought my return on investment in terms of whether it was effort, in terms of dedication, in terms of the quality,
right,
was not correlating with what we were getting in return. And I wanted to throw in the towel. So I sat down with my with one of my mentors. We had a conversation and says, "Emmanuel, how do you like your feedback?" I told him as brutal as it can be. And he says, "Can I tell you something? You're being a victim."
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Says, "How do you like your feedback?" Says, as brutal as it can be. And says, "You're being a victim."
Wow.
Yeah. When I was your age, when I was 29, I didn't have the things that you have. I had not built the brand that you've built. But I started at your age. And look at me now. So you're in a very, very good space.
Right.
And I think for you to, number one, you didn't start your business so that you can garner the support of everyone.
No.
You didn't start your business so that you can get funding. And then that was like a light bulb moment for me. And so I learned one thing. I know this sounds very cliche, but you need to know why you're doing what you're doing.
Right. Right.
If you're there plotting, I think one of the things that's very important, that's very key, and it's going to be fuel, is you need to know why you're doing what you're doing.
So understand your why.
Yes.
Okay.
What am I doing here? That will sort out all your problems.
Mm.
And for me now, I do what I do when I look at my employees, my colleagues at work.
Yes.
And I look at myself. And now I look at business, not from a money-making point,
right,
but from, I look at business from a career perspective.
Mm.
You see, doctors and teachers don't show up at work to be rich.
No. No.
But there's this myth, and I think we need to debunk it, that when you're an entrepreneur, when you're a business person, you should be rich. Mm. And that is where the frustration comes from.
Right.
So people should take business as a career.
Right.
Just take it as a career. Show up. If you need to deliver a computer to Kamiza, just do it.
Pick it up.
Yeah.
And do what you want to do.
If you get paid for it, well and good.
Mm.
So to treat your business as a career, but also to know why you're doing that business, but also to look after impacts.
Right.
Yeah, I think you will then be able to find fulfillment.
Right.
And fulfillment is the fuel that keeps you going.
Right.
So the impact is, what are we doing for the greater good?
Mm.
Beyond myself as an entrepreneur driving a Range Rover, beyond myself as an entrepreneur flying business class, beyond myself as an entrepreneur going on a holiday in the Maldives and Mauritius and so on and so forth. So really, if you can, these three things, I think will help you as a person to know why you're doing what you're doing, but also to then be, to look for impact, to look for impact and say, and that is where I think the magic when it comes to innovation stems from.
Right.
Because you're looking, how can I impact community?
Right.
And that is where the innovation hub that you were talking about.
Yes.
I was thinking to myself, we are scaling the business, we are growing, but how does this impact the next person? I think those three things are very, very cardinal in...
I like that. You've basically spoken about legacy beyond anything that you do in your physical or limited time frame.
Yeah.
So the vision should outlive you.
Exactly.
Yeah. And if it's not big enough to outlive you, then why bother doing it? It's, you know, it's a hobby. It's a pastime, but it's got to be something that leaves a mark.
Exactly.
Which actually begs the question. E-mark.
Yeah.
I've never understood that name.
E-mark. Basically, it's the E is Emmanuel.
Yes.
And the mark is here to leave a mark.
There we go.
But I tricked my friend into this. So we started the business with a friend of mine whilst on campus.
Right.
So he was trading as a solo trader. I was as well. And he understood the dynamics around eBay at the time.
Right.
And we sat down and he says, why don't we team up and do this thing together?
Right.
So, oh, fantastic.
Right.
When you're in a lecture, I could be the one ordering stuff and looking for stuff online,
right,
and
right,
vice versa. He says, okay, fine. So his name was Malioa, a very good friend of mine.
Right.
He says, okay, fine. What are we going to call this thing? So I was there in my room and I'm thinking, but I knew that... I knew for me, this is what I want to do at the time. So I said, E-mark, Emmanuel here to leave a mark.
Right.
So I got him. I called him. I says, I've got a business name for us. He says, oh, okay. What are you calling it? Says, E-mark.
Right.
Okay, can you explain it to me? I said, okay, the E is for Emmanuel. Then the M-A is for Malioa.
You're about to lose a friend when this goes out. You know,
so it's a story that I share. and we're good. Says the M-A is for Malioa. And
yes,
obviously, I added the R-K to make Mark so it can have a nice ring to it.
Right.
But says, oh, okay, cool. But really, it was Emmanuel here to leave a mark.
Ah, brilliant.
Yeah.
And so this moment. Yep. So let's talk about one of the moments where you said, enough already.
Yeah.
I'm done with this entrepreneurship business. What was your thought process? What were you thinking of transitioning to? Did the thought of going back to law cross your mind?
Not quite, eh?
Hmm.
I mean, to talk about the things that you earlier alluded to, how do you deal with the stories, the
right,
innuendos and all these
right,
things, the opposition. What did I do? I was thinking, maybe there's something for me out there. The time that I was contemplating. And for me, this is the only time where I felt, oh, I could actually leave the country and go and set up shop elsewhere. Just go and explore. Again,
right,
it was a thing to do with asking questions. Is there anything else for me out there? Am I limiting myself by being in this environment, which I feel maybe is not giving me the return on investment?
Right.
And I'm thinking, so I wasn't thinking of going back to law. But again, this is one thing. I have so much respect for education. I have so much respect
right,
for people that are in formal employment.
Right.
And,
right,
and we should, people should know this. It's okay to have your
yes,
your 9-to-5.
Yes.
It's okay to be an employee. It's
yes,
okay. And some people are just good employees.
True.
They'll excel.
And, exactly.
I was telling someone, one time we were doing a survey
right,
of what the salaries look like on the market, on the labor market.
Right.
And to my surprise, some salaries, it's money that certain business people will never get.
Will never see. Exactly.
So really, I know there's the whole entrepreneurship frenzy, which
exactly,
is good. Which
exactly,
is good, really, if it's from the right intention.
Right.
But
right,
again, we should just as well respect the folks that show up.
True.
And for me, any entrepreneur that doesn't respect employment is not an entrepreneur.
Well, I
like that.
The
people you work with are employees. So
correct,
what are you saying? This is
correct,
the only way to go about creating impact. I really, so yes, and I'm okay. To be honest, I think I would still work.
Yes.
I would still work. I know a lot of people that people will say, I can't work. I honestly, I mean, if the opportunity came for whatever reason,
right,
and my only option is to work, I'll still do it proudly.
Right, yeah, right, right. I like the fact that you've got some balance in there, because a lot of people lean
yeah,
too far out and say, if you're not an entrepreneur, you're not doing anything with your
no,
life. And
that's
like,
a lie.
No. Let's
yeah,
keep this in context. There is actually a place for everybody.
Exactly.
And you forget that the same employees whom you're disparaging are your customers.
Exactly.
They earn a salary and are able to
spend
make
money.
Your business thrive.
Exactly.
And so show some respect.
Right.
And I like that you've got this balance. And because there are people who just are not hardwired for the rigors of self-employment.
Yeah, that's true.
They just cannot survive.
Exactly.
They're not built for that. And it's okay.
Very much okay. And we shouldn't get everybody to think if you're in formal employment, then you're wasting your time.
I think
that's a wrong way to go. We need a good balance of both. We need technocrats. We need professionals.
True.
That's the only way we would develop the country. Even now, when you look at our GDP, or when you look at the financing space,
right,
we don't have the capital to provide for enterprise or to sustain enterprise. Mm. But what I think we need is a certain number of entrepreneurs,
correct,
people that are passionate.
Yeah.
Can we support this? Can we support them? Can these grow our private sector as an economy? That is what we need. America was grown by about five families.
Right.
It's the Rockefellers.
Right.
You've got the Rockefellers. Who else? The Carnegies of this world.
Correct.
You've got those guys. The JP Morgans.
Yes.
So it's just about five guys. We just need about five families to transform.
to turn
Zambia.
Things around.
Yes.
Brilliant. Now you're young.
Yep.
You've achieved lots.
And I could do anything to be young. I could do everything and anything to be young, Kamiza.
Trust me. Trust me. When you get to my age, you'll look back and say, oh gosh, I was young. So enjoy these moments.
And time
Believe
is
me.
Flying by.
It doesn't slow down, but keep running.
Thank you.
So whatever you do, keep running. I know for a fact that a lot of people in your age group are still trying to figure out what they want to do with their lives. You've had the opportunity to establish yourself really early. And
right.
I think it's a privilege and a blessing. But with it comes the curse of when there's nothing going on and you're not a public figure.
Yeah.
You meet people and it's just, hey, okay, we click, we're vibing, we're
exactly.
good. How do you cope with that? Because I know for a fact, you're no longer in a space where you meet a person and they just say, oh, hi, so who are you? It's almost like, okay, but obviously this person might just know who I am. How do you shield yourself from the issues that arise from being a public figure?
And that's one thing. I never like to think of myself as one.
Oh, trust me, you are.
Am I? I'm not sure it's a good or bad thing, but I'll say thanks anyway.
It is what it is.
So, yes, I mean, it comes with somewhat pressure because people are interested in what you're doing.
Mm.
People are interested in what you're up to. And again, people would say hi, and you have to keep a certain demeanor. You need to keep some certain level of energy. But one of the things, especially with social media, is I try to keep to myself.
Right.
I mean, I'm striking a balance by trying to realize that much as I am doing business, which is out there in the public, I'm also I'm a son somewhere. I'm a brother somewhere, and I try to keep to myself what should be to myself. And
right.
so, one of the things is I don't want to bring my private life to the public,
right?
Because then that creates another problem. I know there are people that are good at it, balancing, but I think for me it's overwhelming. I try to avoid that tension as much as possible.
Right.
So yes, the business is out there, but I try to then just shield my private life from the public, and I think that somewhat works.
You know, you've done a good job of it.
Because I feel with social media, sometimes people don't know when to build a boundary.
Correct.
People don't know when to say, this is Kamiza at a state function.
Yes.
And this is Kamiza as a dad.
Correct.
Yeah. Of
Correct.
Course. It's not up to you to, regulate how people feel or think or say about you. But you can put that boundary.
True.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with folks that are out there in the public. And
yep.
It's
different things work for different people.
True. Different strokes for different folks.
Different strokes for different folks. And for me, that's,
Now, obviously, people see you as a successful business person. There's that thing we call black tax.
Right.
How do you handle that? Because I know every person who knows you as, hey, no, I was with him out in Russia. Mm. He's my guy. We grew up together.
We're together in Dola.
Yes. What? No, in fact, there was a day he didn't get the formula right and I helped him with the equation. And then you run into this person and the usual line is, no, just because he's successful, now you've forgotten us. And that hits home.
Right? It does. It does.
Stabs you. It's like, no, but why would you assume that I have money to burn?
And every day.
You know, it's, hey, there we go. I'm Father Christmas now. Ho, ho, ho. How do you handle that? Because it's a common thing.
Mm.
Yeah. How do you deal with that?
So, I mean, black taxes is a problem for everyone. And these requests come from strangers. They write a whole story from the nuclear, from the family extended nuclear, and so on and so forth. And some requests are very minute.
Yeah.
Very, very minute. You don't know how to handle them.
Mm.
So somebody is looking for a 50 kwacha.
Mm.
You don't know whether the request is genuine, whether this person right. just wants to grab a cigarette.
Mm.
And in their mind, there's no way Kamisa won't have a 50 kwacha.
I mean, you've got money.
So the balance is very difficult. But what I've done is I have a cap.
Right.
So there's money that I set aside. This is just for black tax.
Right.
Yeah. So this is money that I will help with friends and family and funerals and so on and so forth. So once we reach that gap, I don't have.
You don't have any more.
Yeah. Hmm. Because the thought process is, because he's running a business, he always has money. And if you go by that as a business owner, the business will fall. The business will collapse.
True.
So I think it's very important to set aside. But also there are people. There's not so much black tax from my immediate family.
Right.
But there are people, even those from the extended family,
right,
that I have told myself, these are people that I will help because I know they genuinely need the help.
Right.
So those are budgeted for. If I've got excess, I will help you. But I can't. It's overwhelming.
Right.
Yeah. I try as much as possible. I'm Christian. Some of these folks are friends, the family, and they need the support.
Right.
But it's okay to say, I'm not able to help now, but I will help next month, and so on and so forth. But it's not easy. I know I'm trying to be very, very careful, but it's not easy.
You're tiptoeing through these daisies here.
No, Camille, it's not easy, to be honest. It's not.
No, it's never easy. It's always quite challenging. And the worst thing is, there seems to be no realization on the part of people who are demanding this black tax that if your business crumbles because you've given out more than you can sustain, everybody suffers.
They suffer too. They say, the manipulation is real.
It is. No emotional blackmail. So you've forgotten us now.
Yeah. And,
no, but I know exactly who you are. Yeah. And I know that the last time.
You don't
time
even
I,
call us.
Yeah, no, the last time I helped, what I heard is it was party over here, party over there.
I'm telling you.
Something went sideways the moment you had that cash in hand. And then you've forgotten that you told me this story 2 months ago. And somehow this story is still alive and well, and you still need this.
And I'm gonna withhold names, but we had a situation with a friend of mine because we discussed these things,
right?
And he had a relative that was big on black tax.
Mm.
But what this relative was doing is call this person, call the next person, and they were raising money. So when the person passed, they found a whole lot of a stack of money. So the person was just saving.
Okay.
From black tax. So it's not every ask that's genuine.
True.
Yeah,
true.
It's not every ask that's genuine. And so the guy was saying, but you know what? 3 days before this guy passed, he was asking for money. But he's got money this side.
Yeah, I need your money. I'm not
I need
use
your money.
My
money is more important than mine. So not every ask is genuine. Not every ask is because people are under pressure.
Right.
And It's something that you need to communicate.
Right.
There are people that I tell, past your age, we can't do give me money.
Mm-mm.
At your age, it should be, what I want is you telling me that you're looking for money because there's a proposal you want.
Correct.
To work on somewhere.
Correct.
You want to send an application somewhere.
Mm.
But at your age, we can't be talking, you know, give me money for this. No.
In aid of what? And I know it's a given.
Yeah.
It's a Zambian situation where when you're making money, suddenly you're the big man in the room.
Exactly.
And you have a grown person saying, oh, I'm dad. You're like, wait, no. But
you're the wise one at funerals.
Oh, yes. No, you're treated differently at funerals when you show up. Oh, you can't even go up, you know?
Yeah.
And then Vayama, who's come through from the village, I welcome dad. And they're pushed aside and told to sit in the side. And when they raise a wise point, landed on that.
And I think if you ever get to a position of having money, you should be able to tell which one is fake love and what is fake respect.
Mm.
And that then, because you're doing it for yourself.
Right.
So you get a lot of those.
That's right.
You get a lot of fake respect, fake love. And
true.
When you don't let the money get to you, you're able to navigate that very, very well.
Mm.
Because you start seeing older people smaller than you in terms of decision making.
True.
Yeah. But to know that the respect is coming because of the pocket.
Pocket power. Exactly.
Exactly. Is a good reminder for you to stay grounded.
True. You spoke about, you sort of hinted at love.
Yeah.
Love life. Are you seeing anybody?
It's there.
Yeah, it's there, but protected and shielded.
It's there. It's there. We should. We're very optimistic. We should. We invite you to the wedding.
Oh, brilliant!
Plans are there.
I'm liking the sound of this. No, well
plans
played.
Are there.
Well
plans
played.
Are there.
Yeah, and how long have you known this person?
Because the problem with social media these days is if it's not out there, then it's not happening.
It doesn't exist. Exactly.
So. Plans are there. They are underway. You'll be invited.
Without I'm
disclosing
loving this
much detail, but plans are there. We're very optimistic and you'll be proud.
No, time to plan the suits. We're going for a wedding.
There's that meme, and every time I look at it, I laugh. It says, we are cruising nicely.
Nicely. Yes. I like that.
We're cruising nicely.
That sets the tone really.
Yeah, but rush. Rush, really. But plans are there, and we should tie the knot.
I'm loving to hear that. That puts me at ease because I was really worried.
Why were you worried, Kamisa?
I was worried because, to your point, how do you figure out who's the real one?
Who's the real one?
Yeah, but the fact that there's somebody, and obviously you've been walking for a while, for you to be talking about sealing the deal, this is someone who knows you.
Yeah, I think the issue with figuring out who, of course, I'm just talking because this is a very big and complex topic, especially now. Mm. If I'm going to approach a girl now, what she does in my absence has a lot to tell.
Yep.
I think that's the best way to figure out who someone is, is what kind of lifestyle do they live without a man in the picture, without a guy in the picture, them as a person. Who are they?
Right.
What are their values as a person? I think that because the problem is these days we want to attach identity to social media.
Correct.
Because somebody posts nice places, fancy places.
Mm.
They only post when they're looking nice, which we all do.
Mm.
Then that's who they are.
Mm.
You want to just go deeper and see who's this person behind. What they do because of external factors. Who's this person outside social media?
Right.
And I think it's easy to figure out. Mm. I know we all hide through social media.
True.
But if I can just find a loophole and see the kind of life you live outside social media, outside the people you interact with, then I know who you are.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
As we wrap this up, one quick question. When all is said and done, what is the mark that Emmanuel will have left on this planet?
I mean, again, like I never set out to do business. It wasn't part of the plan.
Mm.
It's something that I came across while asking these big questions of life. And now that it's become a career, it's become a source of impact for me, a source of fulfillment. When I look back, I want people to think of me as you need to live life. And I think that is what I'm trying to do. Just live life. And I think there's a lot of planning. There's a lot of wanting to get things. And so people are missing out. For me, this business thing, whether we would call ourselves successful, it's because I was merely living my life and asking questions. And I think I want people to remember me as one guy that lived his life, expressed himself creatively, expressed himself through the work he did. And and I think that is what we are all looking for. It's just to express ourselves, our talents, our dreams to the rest of the world.
Well said and fantastically put. Yeah. It's been absolutely amazing chatting with you, Emmanuel.
Thank you, Kamiza.
Know how busy your schedules are.
And not quite, eh?
We chat very quickly on the phone.
Yes, say,
okay, done. Do you have, fine, I'm coming to the store.
But I'll be very honest with you. I try as much as possible. One of the words I'm removing out of my life is busy.
Right.
I want to pause as much as possible.
Just take in what's happening.
I want to be present. And now these days, one of the most exciting things about my morning is reading a book and a cup of coffee.
There we go.
And for me,
those moments.
Telling you, if I can get as many times as possible to just pause and be present, that is what I'm looking forward to. So please invite me to your next gig. Invite me to, and I'll
by all means, I'll hold you to that. I will call you and tell you, hey, it's happening over here. Come over. 100%.
Yeah.
Thank you so very much. It's really
been
enlightening, refreshing, and inspiring.
Was it?
Yes. Keep doing you.
I was intimidated.
But why?
It's Kamiza.
Come now. I'm a gentle soul. I wouldn't hurt a fly. Or so they claim.
I doubt. Yeah, but no, thank you so very much for having me. I had a blast. It was fun.
The pleasure was entirely ours, and we're completely grateful that you blocked off time for us.
Thank you.
And here's to the future.
Thank you. Here's to the future.
Much appreciated. We've been chatting with an inspiring and incredibly innovative individual. His name is Emmanuel Mwanza. He is the force and the power behind eMark, which is a series of stores that sells literally any gadget that you'd like to order. Have a conversation with them and they'll be able to make it happen for you at a price that is nice in the pocket. But beyond that, he is the embodiment of what we can achieve as Zambians when we simply pursue what it is that we love to do. He is the quintessential Zambian dream story, and we're grateful that we've had an opportunity to chat with him. We have no idea who's going to show up next on Nkwazi Unfiltered, but who knows? It might just be you. Kamiza Chikula, see you in the next one.